Hello everyone, this is Mike Quinsey, Connecting the Light. Different sort of format for today's programme. Not for any actual change, but it's one of those weeks when there, for me, hasn't been quite as much general news. We've got the usual Sheldon Nigel report on behalf of the Spiritual Hierarchy and Galactic Federation, which I shall commence to read in a minute. But there are no additional ones. Last week we had Matthew's message, which was quite long and took up quite a bit of time. Occasionally we get a message from Archangel Michael, which I also think is essential to include. So with slightly less, in some respects, it will give me more time to spend on the what I call the UFO ET section and also the other messages of a spiritual nature. So, I will commence now with Sheldon's message for this week. And it read that we come before you, dear hearts, with more interesting things to tell you. The great battle of words and deeds between the light and the last dark cabal is reaching the final stage. For decades, the legions of the light have covertly contested the dark for dominion of this reality. Now, the winner of this monumental power struggle is evident on a number of fronts, legal, political, and financial. The dark is in retreat and facing the fact that its Waterloo is upon it. The US administration is unable to plug the innumerable leaks in the dam of its power structure, indicating the dark self-made imminent collapse. No one person or group can forever stave off history, and this period in history is preordained. It is a time when the light is divinely scheduled to resume her supremacy over your reality. Likewise, you are close to the moment when you are once more to take up the mantle of divine guardianship of Mother Earth and this solar system. Your inner Earth family eagerly awaits your inauguration to your rightful standing. The coming times will see an end to the chaos that presently engulfs you. Around the globe, the traditional forms of governance are under great stress, as are the outworn economic and financial structures. The widespread dysfunction testifies to the profound changes that are imminent. Stealthily, a new age of universal abundance is sneaking up to surround you. It becomes more obvious by the day that your present world is in an increasingly unacceptable reflection of who you are becoming, and thus a massive transformation is mandatory. To this end, our Earth allies chose life paths that incorporated these great changes as their deepest desires. They understand the immense consequence of their collective task and how crucial their success is to your divine future. They have taken incredible risks to ensure that this grand future was indeed manifested as planned by heaven. This mission was then much reinforced by our mass arrival in your solar system. In short, the Dark Ones are facing a final reckoning which is forcing them to relinquish their control over you. The end of the rule of the dark is to be formally celebrated by our public arrival on your shores, and this time is getting near. We know that the final spasms of this struggle with the dark seem unduly drawn out, and this is both discouraging and frustrating for you. We truly understand your point of view, and our many covert visitors undercover in your various societies for decades daily report back to us on your difficulties. Some of you are in more distressing situations than others, but in all cases it is hard to live on such a divided and troubled world. All of you must witness the machinations of the powerful which daily act to compound your hardships. Our ambassadors and liaison personnel want you to know of their concern for you and of their assiduous efforts on your behalf. Also, our medical teams wish you to know that your transformation is progressing most satisfactorily as is Mother Earth. All in all, a game plan for rapid channeling. All in all, a game plan for rapid change is beginning to make itself known. The times, dear ones, they are changing. First contact arrangements are coming along well. The many negotiations with our Earth allies and sundry governments are now completed. These talks laid the foundations for your transitional world, in which a number of amazing things are to happen. We touched upon some of these in the last few messages, so now let us add some more details. Your world is caught between two storm systems. On the one hand is the issue of global warming, caused by your thoughtless despoiling of Mother Earth's land, air and water. On the other are the effects of the general shift of your solar system towards a new, fully conscious reality. At its present level of understanding, your science cannot fathom the relationship between these two factors. All is connected. Ignoring one leads to a blighted comprehension of the other. In effect, the appearance of pollution on a grand scale is a sign to a living solar system that change is literally in the air. When a limited consciousness society begins the process of industrialization, it usually does so with no thought for the environment. Within mere decades, the resulting deterioration in the biosphere triggers subtle changes in the planet's demeanor. This alerts the other planets and the sun that a period of big change lies ahead. A symbiotic relationship then ensues between the growing levels of pollution and some astonishing alterations in your solar system. By means of the living web of consciousness, all living organisms respond to a changing ecosystem. The sun thus began a series of adjustments that recently became continuous hyperactivity, and this huge outpouring of solar energy in turn caused a hyperreaction among the various planets. A natural concomitant to all this was the mass extinction of myriad plants and animals on Earth. And so, Earth's global warming was setting up the process for the transformation of the entire solar system. The planet is exhibiting the sudden changes associated with the cusp between major geological ages. In fact, this is not far from the truth. Huge changes in surface configuration are to take place during your leave of absence to complete your metamorphosis. Before then, your cleanup of your home world will signal that the great shift is to happen. This symbiotic relationship between industrial pollution and the huge shift in your reality has been mirrored on other worlds and in this and other galaxies. Our scientists are both happy and sad to see it occurring here once again. A while back, it was our desire to complete this shift in a much gentler manner, but the nature of the dark and the extent of its power over you eventually caused us to accede to the present divine tactics, and now the long-awaited events are ready to manifest. This year is to be a momentous one. Many wonderful things are taking shape that promises a quick end to the dark and its villainous last cabal. Your role is to embrace this change and do whatever is needed to push it to completion. Our role is to assist by employing our abilities to accelerate much-needed change. Remember, big change happens abruptly. This could mean anywhere from a matter of days to a few years. But regardless of how things pan out, it is crucial for you to remain focused and not to give in to impatience. Much is happening in Europe, Asia, and the Americas that promise a speedy resolution of these matters. In any event, know that change accompanied by a great shift is on your horizon. Our fleet keeps careful tabs on all aspects of this mission, and with the advice of Heaven and Lord Surya, acts in a steadfast and appropriate manner. As we have said repeatedly, first contact is a complex business, and in your case, is unique in many respects. It is not often that we deem such a protracted operation to be acceptable, and our forbearance was largely due to the behest of heaven. You are a special group, and thus special measures were in order. Now you are ready to pop, and a new reality is soon to be your lot. Then finally, the many mysteries about life, heaven, that you long to unravel, are to be made known. Moreover, a whole heap of facts that have not yet even occurred to you are to be imparted to you. A large quantity of galactic humanity, far beyond your widest sci-fi tales, are about to become your friends, colleagues, and above all, family. We greatly look forward to the moment when we can finally meet you and celebrate our grand reunion. And the message finalizes with the following. Today we further discuss the events of the day. We ask you, as always, to remain patient. We ask you as well to prepare yourselves for what is likely to be imminent. Great changes are afoot. Be ready to respond in an appropriate and mature manner to what is preparing to happen. And thereby ends the message. And I like the emphasis which was placed in the message on the fact that what is about to happen is imminent. And although the messages come out weekly, I think there's a growing feeling that we are definitely getting so much nearer to the time when the changes can really start to take place. Now I'll move on to my news items. Some weeks I have masses of them, but this week not quite so many, which is perhaps as well. The one that really took my eye was a report that came off the website tldn.org, and it was under the heading of plans are underway to microchip every newborn in US and Europe, and it reads as follows. Regarding plans to microchip newborns, Dr. Kilder said the US has been moving in this direction in secrecy. Dr. Kilder, who is the Dr. Kilder appears to be someone, I believe, from Sweden. I was looking for some identification of who they were connected with. But anyway, the report goes on to say that in Sweden, Prime Minister Olof Palme gave permission in 1973 to implant prisoners. And Data Inspection's ex-director general, Jan Fries, revealed that nursing home patients were implanted in the mid-1980s. The technology is revealed in the 1972/47 Swedish State Report, and that is according to Statens Officiella Utredningar. And the question is asked, are you prepared to live in a world in which every newborn baby is microchipped? And finally, are you ready to have your every move tracked, recorded, and placed in Big Brother's data bank? According to the Finnish article distributed to doctors and medical students, time is running out for changing the direction of military medicine and mind control technology, ensuring the future of human freedom. She wrote, and I quote, implanted human beings can be followed anywhere. Their brain functions can be remotely monitored by supercomputers and even altered through the changing of frequencies. And so wrote Dr. Kilder. Guinea pigs in secret experiments have included prisoners, soldiers, mental patients, handicapped children, deaf and blind people, homosexuals, single women, the elderly, school children, and any group of people considered marginal by the elite experimenters. So that's all I've got from that particular article, but it just raised the question, what are you going to do in America about this looming idea to microchip every newborn baby? I think that's taking it so far that when you look back to the communist state with their degree of controls and curtailment of people's freedoms,
What is shaping up here, I think, in the United States is something far more oppressive. So let's hope that some people rise to this news, take some action against it. On the website The Canadian, there was an article that was picked up by someone regarding the US being a state sponsor of terrorism. And the writer of this article says, many thanks to the editor on helping to get the word out. A nation that pretends to stand for liberty, justice, freedom and democracy, and especially Christianity and family values, practicing state-sponsored terrorism is one form of bankruptcy. It appears to come off a site called agoracosmopolitan.com. And the writer says, when you consider how many Americans do not have and cannot afford health care, the massive amount of expenditures is a sure sign of a sick nation. And the writer says, I think it is our food supply, water pollution and lifestyle in combination form that is undermining the quality of life of many Americans in the area of health. And goes on to say that when your health is gone, it is a form of bankrupt in the department of the quality of life. And note that our governments at the state and federal level have no such department. The article also goes on to say that if you get if you called the joint press conference on December the 11th with Secretary of Defense Gates and Secretary of State Rice, she stated that the U.S. was prepared to reverse 27 years of policy towards Iran if they would abandon their nuclear ambitions. The writer says, my read on that is the PRC informed the Bush administration if they attacked and upended their $400 billion in oil and gas deals, the PRC would pull the plug on the US financially by dumping the United States dollar and the US Treasury bonds they hold. It could also manifest itself as Russia cutting off the oil and gas supply to Europe. It goes on to say that the US planning is bankrupt as Afghanistan, Iraq, and the Caspian base misadventure have so succinctly demonstrated. The article then goes on to say that their position is simple, that the War Powers Act should be repealed right now, with the caveat that if Israel attacks, all aid to Israel is cut off until further notice, saying that this GWOT charade has gone on long enough. Most Americans do not know that the Australians were not keen on joining Bush in his bogus GWOT, just as the Canadians refused to do so after they learned their lessons in Desert Storm and Bosnia, and now many of their troops are dying or totally disabled, just like ours and those in the UK too. Where desperation makes someone do wrong, is like George Bush and his desperation to keep his GWOT alive and moving. It is such a lousy, bankrupt plan, he has to keep resuscitating it. On CNN International last December the 10th, Bush's approval rating on Iraq was down to 20% and still dropping. And the writer says, only the deaf, dumb, blind and insane think our nation's military forces are in good hands with G.W. Bush, finally saying that the troops are on the verge of mutiny, and any general that dares not to agree with this latest bogus desperation surge are summarily replaced by a great decider who is always wrong and proves it every time he opens his mouth. Now, I think you can find all that in on a website called tdrnews.org. Just to repeat the site that it appears to have come from. Next item I've got here is one written by Dan Frumkin, who's wrote a report special to the WashingtonPost.com. It's only goes back to Thursday, January 4th, and it's referring to the New York Daily News. And on that day, on January the 4th, it reported on a signing statement that President Bush had dealt with, which was issued 2 weeks earlier, in which he asserts his right to open mail without a warrant. And signing statements have historically been used by presidents mostly to explain how they intend to enforce the laws passed by Congress. Bush has used them to quietly assert his right to ignore those laws. And James Gordon Meek writes about the latest, President Bush has quietly claimed sweeping new powers to open Americans' mail without a judge's warrant. The president asserted his new authority when he signed a postal reform bill into law on December the 20th, Bush then issued a signing statement that declared his right to open people's mail under emergency conditions. That claim is contrary to existing law and contradicted the bill he had just signed, say experts who have reviewed it. Most of the Postal Accountability and Enhancement Act deals with the mundane reform measures, but it also explicitly reinforced protections of first-class mail from searches without a court's approval. There we are, another ominous sign, isn't it, that your mail can be, well, allegedly opened without a warrant. Another nasty move to mean that it's possibly at the end of the day, if all these things come to be, nothing that could not be known about you, and you could be tracked to wherever you were at any point in time. And it wouldn't take too long for them to build a database on possibly everything that you ever did and even thought about. So there we are, that's the one on that. Now, someone did a sort of preview on where we are with the Leo Wanta episode, and Chris Story posted disinformation on his site called worldreports.org, and he made a few headline notes which sum up, I suppose, where he feels we are with it all. And he said the whole report by Christopher Story on that website I gave you takes some reading and rereading to digest the data. But he said it suggests the following, among other things, that the resignation of Cheney may occur over Halliburton misappropriations, and that the secret intel cabal is figuring out a way to blame Wanta for all the trouble that ensues, that Paulson's previous arrest was confirmed from another source, and Negroponte could be forced out by Cheney and others to forestall implementation of presidential directive. They talk of Paulson flying from city to city to avoid rearrest, and certain members in the West Wing obtaining lawyers, and that case numbers have been assigned to various operatives, and the financial fallout of all this could be considerable. It goes on to mention that one of the stories is headed Treason and Scamming Orgy at the White House, Disgrace Paulson on the Run, Avoiding Rearrest. That apparently came up last Friday the 12th. And so the notes go on. I don't know whether it tells us really a lot more than what we might have mentioned in the previous meetings, but I suppose the key factor that's come out there is about the resignation, or likely resignation, of Cheney over the Halliburton misappropriations. Have another item here that came through an Associated Press writer, Amy Teeble, on Wednesday, January the 17th. It was headed Jerusalem and talking of Prime Minister Ehud Olmert and Defence Minister Amir Peretz coming under renewed pressure to resign after the Israeli Army's Chief of Staff stepped down in the wake of the flawed Lebanon War. And it reads that the sudden departure of Israel's top military official, Lieutenant General Dan Hallutz delivered another setback to the Prime Minister, whose popularity has plummeted following last summer's war and a string of political scandals. And Israel's Attorney General opened a criminal probe into Olmert's role in the 2005 bank privatisation. Lieutenant General Dan Hallutz stepped down after dozens of internal inquiries into the month-long Lebanon war and found widespread problems in the military's performance. Hallutz had previously rejected calls to resign despite the growing loss of confidence of his political superiors and subordinates in the army. I have to say, I hope that might be what they call the thin end of the wedge, because if we can get the people out of the seats of power that are in favour of wars, and get people in a more balanced or totally peace-minded, perhaps we may see a new form of consciousness, even at government level, gradually coming in across the world. I think all these things that promote changes and get rid of the people that seem to favour wars, a way of settling things, out of the way is a very good sign. Final item of news I've got here is called TBR News, December the 27th, 2006. It's headed as the voice of the White House. Can't see any other names to accredit this article to, but it does come again off the website tbrnews.org, and it reads that Bush does not like to be crossed, and when the Prime Minister said that public support of the US position was weak, he said that, and he was talking there of the Australian Prime Minister John Howard, he said that maybe your people should realise that terrorism knows no borders, and I would hope that these crazies don't attack you. Howard replied, according to the transcripts of the conversation, that in the case of a perceived Muslim attack on Australians, he would certainly have the full support of his Australians. What happened next is thoroughly documented. Bush spoke with Tennant, who was fully aware of the background of the 9/11 attacks. The CIA and the Mossad have very good and very close relations, and the CIA was fully aware of the penetration of the Atta group in Hollywood, Florida, and the preparations for the attacks. A discussion was held in Langley between Tennant and a top Mossad official, whose name was withheld at the time, and assurances were given that, and quote, something certainly can be done to help out there. Now, the report goes on to say that the resulting attack was the second one planned. The first consisted of placing a special explosive device in an Australian public building. Fortunately for the population of Sydney, it failed to go off and is still in place. The second one went off in October in an area where many Australians were known to visit, and the results are well known. Australia did indeed join the coalition, but now the population, strongly regretting it, are suspicious of foul play, and these are beginning to surface. The writer says the Romans had a saying, truth crushed to earth will rise again. To quote from an official memo, George W. Bush referred to the reluctant Aussies as a bunch of ex-con kangaroo hunters. And the writer says, having read over a draft of an article credited to a Mr. Haring, complete with pictures, documents and plans, it is well worth the read. And be sure to remember the ambassador's tapes. Any questions, where are they now when we need them? So that's all from that particular item on the general news. It just shows that anywhere in the world, the forces of the dark cabal can touch you, and it doesn't matter where they are, and if you don't concede to their request, it rather looks as though they put you in a position where you eventually will. Right, I'm moving on to the part of my programme now, which covers ETs and UFOs, and I'm pleased to see that we've got more than ample time now to cover what's left. People who've listened to the programme regularly will recall that from time to time in this section, I do refer back to my collection of old flying saucer reviews, and I dug one out again this time, which goes back to March-April 1969. And I thought this was an interesting topic because it talks about the Men in Black report and asks whether they should be taken seriously. Now, I don't intend to read the whole lot out because a lot of it is speculation by the writer, who was John Harney. But he has quoted certain facts and instances about this type of thing that I actually think would be interesting to him. Now, the first report that he talks of about the Men in Black variety was in the post-war phase of UFO activity, which is generally agreed to have been contained in statements made by Harold A. Dahl to Kenneth Arnold during the latter's investigation of the alleged Maury Island sighting of June the 21st, 1947. Now, according to Dahl, the day after his sighting, a man called at his home early in the morning and invited him to breakfast. Dahl said he was not surprised at this, for men often called on people in his type of work early in the morning for the purpose of buying salvaged logs. The man wore a black suit, was of medium height, and there was nothing unusual about his appearance. He appeared to be about 40 years of age. Dahl accepted his invitation and noted that the man drove a 1947 Buick sedan. The man suggested that Dahl should drive his own car and follow him. On the way downtown, Dahl failed to get the license number of the car he was following. The two men went on to a cafe and ordered breakfast. As soon as they sat down, the man immediately began telling Dahl in minute and accurate detail the events of the previous day when he and others had witnessed the UFOs. The man then told Dahl that if he loved his family and didn't want anything to happen to his general welfare, he would not discuss his experience with anyone. Now, that, I think, must be one of the first classic cases of the Men in Black using their threats to try and silence UFO witnesses. The full account, incidentally, of the Maury Island affair is given in one of Kenneth Arnold's books. Well, it was co-written also by Ray Palmer. I don't know if it's available now. It was called The Coming of the Saucers. I suppose you could pick up second-hand copies of it. The article went on to say that the classic MIB case is the one involving Albert K. Bender, who closed down his organisation, the International Flying Saucer Bureau, on the orders of three Men in Black. The story circulating at the time was the effect that Bender was studying his collection of UFO data when the solution to the mystery suddenly occurred to him. The Men in Black visited him, assured him that his guess was correct, and warned him not to divulge the secret to anyone else. Bender refused to give reasons for closing his bureau, but hinted that a government agency was responsible. Bender's case, along with other stories of a similar nature, received great publicity in the UFO world, and Gary Barker wrote a book on this theme. In 1963, Bender published his own account of the affair, and it was noted that far from clearing up the mystery, Bender's story only served to create more confusion, for in it he claimed that the MIB were beings from another planet who were visiting the Earth at that time for the purpose of extracting the substance from the seawater to take back to their own planet for use as food, and that anyone who discovered too much about their activities was silenced in order that the aliens could work undisturbed. Now, I'll move on a bit in the actual article. And it goes on to say that although stories about the harassment of UFO witnesses and investigators have come from various countries. Ever since 1947, they have been particularly persistent in the USA. Such stories often sounded very convincing. Witnesses claim to have been visited by men purported to be FBI agents or dressed in Air Force uniforms. These men confiscated UFO photographs and warned witnesses to keep quiet about their sightings. Naturally, many of the UFO groups took these reports seriously and complained bitterly to the Air Force. In January 1967, however, ufologists got quite a shock when Colonel George Freeman, the Pentagon spokesman for the Project Blue Book, revealed that the US Air Force was just as annoyed about mystery men as the ufologists were, and Colonel Freeman cited several cases. A man bearing credentials from the North American Air Defense, or Mr. Rex Heffley, who had taken a series of UFO pictures in California in 1965 and demanded the originals. The photographs were never returned, and NORAD denied any knowledge of the incident. And in February 1960, Mr. Joe Perry of Grand Blanc, Michigan, took a similar set of pictures and was visited by two men posing as FBI agents who confiscated his photographs. Colonel Freeman denied that these incidents were connected. With the Air Force, UFO investigation was quoted as saying, "We haven't been able to find out anything about these men. We would sure like to catch one." Now, I'll leave that particular part where it is, but I have to say, what you tend to get in these types of situations is when people in authority get found out, they then try to, as it were, pass the buck. And in pretending that it's nothing to do with them, they try to place the responsibility somewhere else. So there's a lot of disinformation going around about these types of things. But of course, since this magazine came out in 69, I think we've probably come to see that the Men in Black have persistently been around, and one has to feel they're clearly set up by the FBI to do exactly what they say, which is to warn off people from giving evidence about their knowledge of UFOs and possibly even contacts. I can't see that it's made a lot of difference, really, because of the number of sightings that have taken place, thousands, or indeed a million or two, and they can't control all of them. I move on to another part of the article, and they say that the reports by John Keel concerning the Men in Black and other strange occurrences have attracted a good deal of criticism, and in some quarters, amusement. And the Flying Saucer report said that there is said to be a group of scientists interested in UFOs who burst into fits of uncontrollable laughter whenever they see a John Keel document. It also seems that some of the criticisms have been couched in terms more appropriate to the wilder extremes of politics than to scientific inquiry. There is only one way to deal with the startling claims of John Keel and others who have written in similar vein, and the editor of the Flying Saucer Review summed it up neatly. He said, "If chairborne critics, writers, UFO buffs, or laughing scientists are urged to say Mr. Keel is wrong, then it is incumbent upon them to get out and about and to thoroughly investigate his claims. If they do not do this, they will find themselves on insecure ground." And that is where I will leave my extracts from an article about the Men in Black. Now, for a week or two, I've been reading items about UFOs, UFO sightings, and in one case, I think, contact with ETs, which came from an excellent article by Linda Moulton Howe, who is on the website earthfiles.com. Now, this particular series of reports I read mentioned various short bits of information regarding UFO incidents. I'll read out just a few here. There was one regarding an American military shooting at Adif Technology, and the person who contacted Linda said, "I wanted to relate the story of my father, who was a UFO Navy officer From 1941 to 73 and from 1962 to 73 he was captain, and during this period was granted the highest security clearance, which was referred to as super security clearance. And naturally this gave him the ability to see and hear about the most classified material. And this person said, upon listening to your report on Coast, that's Coast to Coast AM, I decided to pose some questions to my father. Mind you, he had not listened to the show, and in fact, never has heard Coast to Coast AM. So, of course, his answers could not be influenced by any media. I began asking him if the subject of ETs and UFOs was ever discussed at this very classified seminar. He initially stated that he really couldn't get the specifics of what was discussed. Then I asked if, based on what he may have heard or seen at the seminar, did he believe ETs existed? He said, well, I would say yes. After what one calls a pregnant pause, he actually shocked me by volunteering the following. And he said, quote, well, there was a craft shot down, and the writer says, I asked, what craft was shot down? And he replied, a UFO had been shot down some years before. I believe it was in the late 1940s. I asked, was it one or more than one? He stated that to his knowledge, just one had been shot down. And he concluded that by saying that this seemed to dovetail with what had been discussed by Earth Files through Linda and on that radio show Coast to Coast AM. There is a further article which comes under the heading of Roswell, talking about their military raider and the pilot who disappeared pursuing a UFO. Yes, I wonder how many times that's happened. Report reads, I worked with a man named HF who lives in Brush Prairie, Washington, which is a northern suburb of Vancouver, and he worked at radar installations and went on alert for Roswell. He knew of a pilot disappearing in pursuit of a UFO. He had very high security clearance for communications and was told by Men in Black, there they've cropped up again, that some events never happened and were not to be discussed, such as a high-speed object being tracked via radar. Even with the passage of time, he could not even acknowledge Area 51, which is Nellis AFB at Nevada, because he did not want to end up in Leavenworth prison. He reported first-hand sighting of a mothership in the desert while being stationed there, and reported detecting traces of radioactivity in his trail. Final report I want to read, which will conclude the extracts I've made from this rather lengthy report, is one referring to the White Sands Missile Range Commander and of mysterious disc and a radioactive light beam. There's not much to report here, but it just qualifies it a bit by saying, a friend of mine in college told me his father was commander of White Sands in the 1950s and said it was common knowledge during test missile firings that mysterious discs would swoop in at thousands of miles per hour, follow the missile trajectory and then swoop off again. He also said that two airmen reporting to the sick bay were found to be surrounded by light and later died of radiation poisoning. I wonder if the truth of their deaths ever is notified to their next of kin. I very much doubt it. Otherwise, these types of incidents would surely be more widely known. Now, funnily enough, the next extract I have also comes from earthfiles.com through Linda Moulton Howe. And this was one where a White Sands Navy radar operator saw this circle of V2 rocket launch. And this report said that on several occasions, and it's someone talking about their father, obviously, Dad could see flying saucers circling the V2 rockets. He said they were a large silvery disc that looked like a pie pan turned upside down. And the eyewitness there is referred to as US Navy DC-1 Lloyd Eugene Cann. That's it, basically, I think, although my eyes go down a bit and I find something that refers to May 1947, when at least two German rockets launched from White Sands went off course and crashed. And it says that in both instances, round aerial discs were seen visually and on radar near the rockets just before the rapidly moving missiles veered from their trajectories. One on May the 29th, 1947, turned 180 degrees in mid-air and crashed near the new airport in Juarez, Mexico. The result was a huge crater in the ground, but nothing was left of the large rocket. Andrew Kitchener's sources told him the truth was that the launch rocket had evaporated. The implication was that the disc technology was responsible. The base commander explained to the media that peculiar phenomena had interfered with the rocket test. That peculiar phenomena were the unidentified aerial disc. And that's the end of that particular report. But that's very interesting, I find, isn't it? That a rocket was completely, well, vaporized. I mean, best of my knowledge, we haven't yet, have we, got that type of technology? And we wouldn't vaporize one of our own rockets, would we? I don't know. Asked a few questions there, hasn't it? Final item that I have here in my ET UFO file is one that tells us that the Institute for Cooperation in Space, which comes from Gaia's website, don't appear to have that in full with this report, saying that the UN General Assembly has now a resolution to establish United Nations Decade of Contact and Diplomatic Relations with ETs. And it reads that for the first time in almost 27 years, the United Nations General Assembly will be debating the issue of establishing diplomatic relations with advanced extraterrestrial civilizations that may now be visiting Earth. And on December 16th, 2005, a resolution to establish United Nations Decade of Contact was formally transmitted to the incoming President of the General Assembly, Jan Eliasson of Sweden, by the Institute for Cooperation in Space. And it was supported by others. So that's a very interesting step in the right direction, isn't it? I hope something comes of that. That's the first time I've read of that, although that was proposed some little while ago. Now, fortunately, I've got quite a bit of time left, and it delights me to be able to get into what I call the other messages, because this is really more in line with what I had always intended the programme should be, which is to be somewhat spiritual in its intentions, bring to you the situations that are around you, and also to tell you some of the nice things that are happening that will hopefully bring the changes that we desire in the not too distant future. Now, everybody loves predictions, and what I've got here are a couple of channelings. I'll just check that I've got my facts right by looking at the front here to see who's doing it, and it's from a website called What's Up on Planet Earth. It belongs to Karen Bishop. So, it's not actually a channeled one, unless she was inspired, of course, which she may well have been. It may be purely her opinion. But it reads as follows. 2007 will be the year of all embracing unity. Many, many more will be willing to let go of the old and embrace the new. People will unite as never before. Turning our backs on the old systems, governments and the like will snowball. The people will take the power into their own hands. It will be the year of liberation and it will be the year of global connection as well. It will also be a year for much humanitarianism. These are the traits of the new energy, but just viewing the future energetically, these themes are very present anyway. Being a 9-year only serves to validate. Get my tongue twisted lately, aren't I? being an idea only serves to validate what will most assuredly occur. I jump on a little bit because it goes into some little detail talking about specific countries. And she's talking about then the ascension primer and saying it is simply a part of evolution. And although this unity theme will not suddenly occur when the clock strikes 12 on December the 31st, it has been building up and will greatly snowball as the year 2007 progresses. As 2007 brings in this completion energy in the form of embracing as many as possible so that they can be on board for the up-and-coming new ways of the new planet Earth, and as we revisit the old reality of the prior 3D creations for these brief periods of time in order to share our light, she urges us to remember the words of the country singer Rascal Flatts, and it was in his song called When the Sands Run Out. She quotes a few lines from it. I'm quickly looking down and see if there's one that stands out. Not really, maybe. Starts off the saying, I'm going to stop looking back and start moving on and learn how to face my fears, love with all of my heart and make my mark. I think that's a good one. So there we are. That's briefly what Karen thought about this coming year. Have one here which came through Mark Stone, and he titles it A Message from Source and the New Earth. That is quite a long one. It's a good 3 pages. I intend to read as much of that as can. Now, first part is some of Mark's own comments. So I'll read one or two that I think are pertinent. Mark's very well informed, so his comments are well worth noting. And he's talking about the changes and saying that in Earth time, it is now a matter of weeks and months. And he's then saying that the new people are due to move into the governments and institute a new self-governing mode of operations. He talks of the crystal cities becoming clearly visible as the fog of duality fully lifts. And you find yourself in the new stages of awareness that is clear, that is a clear new earth vibration. He talks of the new earth that moves in and out of our conscious awareness at present. He says the media really are serving our vision for you now, unbounded hearts. And while they appear self-serving, they are, in fact, in a new altering vibration. What makes the front page is gradually shifting. A new Earth Affairs announcement is what will be making the headlines over the coming months as you shift your awareness over to a new era of peace, inner contentment, a clear realization and firm manifestation of your dearest hopes and dreams. Another bit I quote, energetically, there are still some alignments to occur, and these will largely be over the Christmas period when the activity of consciousness is at an all-time high. He also says there will be an infallible sense of knowing that the final contact with the off-world beings will be swift and final, and this will be completely shut down all old Earth operations once and for all. He talks about the Matrix that has operated on Earth for about the past 24,000 years and came down approximately 2 weeks ago when the report originally came out at the end of last year. That may be so. Anyway, what I want to move on to is the end of his report, because he says that Mother Earth now wants to address you. And so the consciousness that is Mother Earth says, and I quote, Dear ones, I continue to align and transmute, and my time is drawing to a close, where I choose to bear the weight of the ages. Within my form, there are tremendous movements in the physical and within consciousness, as I constantly release the pressures that we collected, created so early into the game. My entire body is now racking with the miscreated vibrations, and there are many times when I simply long to burst freely into the light of unbounded home. I wish to inform you of the energetic changeover to my new form, that is point, and that point is a final and done deal comprising in earth terms of time, it is months at this juncture. My light form is increasing in its transcendental capacity, and I'm utilizing all the forces of home to transmute all the miscreated qualities of consciousness. It has always been a guided and collective venture. The electromagnetic shift over to my new form is well underway. The constant shift in awareness is key to my fully releasing my pain and engaging humanity with the unlimited surrender to the true light. Our light workers are creating the change that I so desperately desire. I see human affairs and I witness untold torments in my being when I comprehend what mankind has inflicted on itself and my physical being down through the ages. The time is now at hand where I'm simply shifting in vibration constantly, as I no longer wish to bear the pain, and I'm choosing now to simply embrace the natural swell and tide of creation that brings the release that I have longed for in my aspect. There is no other way of expressing this, dear hearts. I acknowledge the power of the One, and I fully embrace you all in my heart for all eternity. Know that the time to divine surrender and the fulfillment of the earth game is being played out as you read this. Untold workings of the light are currently playing out. Timelessness of old are being transmuted, and the weight of the ages I can now freely perceive, closing the door on as I move fully into our new harmonic frequency. It is with the greatest gratitude that I acknowledge your surrender to the natural infinite plan. We have all been through this together, and it is together that we move and create the new dawn. For all time, this time is a testimony to our perseverance and our ability to accept the truth of our being coursing through us with the infinite streams of possibility that express our complete natures as creator spirits. I am one with you in the infinite unfolding flame. As I said, I hold you all in my heart, and know, dear ones, that the very release that you seek is being created right now, at this most auspicious time. Heaven has never been more at hand. The workings of the light are paradigm level as we lay the new dawn clearly at our collective feet. Adonai, to your hearts, minds, and spirits, we are in this together. Forever yours, I am all expressions of earth. And so we have it. Well, that's rather nice. I certainly believe that Mother Earth, in the consciousness she is, became channeled through people on the earth. I have no problem with that. I'll finish up now with a Christmas message from Sananda, which came off the website called telepathycourse.com. It came through Helen Engel. And although it was a Christmas message, I mean, it still holds good now, a few weeks later. And Sananda said, there is a tide in the affairs of men. There is a message of hope to give to the people. This message of hope comes not from far off, but from your own central heart, the heart of this planet. All is well. If you will look beyond the struggle and beyond the gunfire and beyond the polluted atmosphere, you will find serenity and peace, such as has never been seen before. The serenity and peace are filtering through the polluted atmosphere and through the gunfire, and it is entering the hearts of my people. Peace is coming. Let your hearts be glad, for I am coming. Peace is coming, and for the past 2,000 years I have been saving up for that moment when I will stand before you and will observe the Son of Man returned in a different body and even in a glorified spirit. A heart full of compassion and a strong desire to set mankind on a new path. This will be the path of prosperity, the path of brotherly love, the path of sisterhood activity for the common good. You will all be on the path of nurturing Mother Earth and the insects and creatures who inhabit her. I'm here to declare the new earth and the new peace and the new brotherhood, and I declare it with joy. You may not be able to see it above the death and starvation and the rubble, but when that is cleared, you will see clearly and you will see my face. I will look into your eyes. I will say, come with me, my beloved brothers and my beloved sisters. Let us walk together again, helping the less fortunate, making sure that each one has a home, clothing, food, and an education, and the time to play, and the time to enjoy Mother Earth, time to enjoy the sky, and to travel to other planets. Of this you can be sure, that they are waiting for you to visit them, just as they are waiting to visit you. The day of reconciliation is fast approaching, peace will be declared, and joy will abound. And Sananda concludes it by saying, I leave you with this message, you are pure and holy, and no transgression will come upon you. I will only add for someone who may be listening who is not sure of who Sananda is, that Sananda is the energy that was Jesus, and he claims the name of Sananda, which is his Ura vibration for this period of time. I will now say thank you to everyone for being with me. Hope you enjoyed the articles that I dug out for you, and I hope you'll be with me next week. I thank you all for being there. May God bless you all. Thank you.